Welcome to the Eye Basketball Podcast, the Pick Control Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, always blowing in our ear. How's it going?
I believe he did that. It's just, wow. And it's amazing, too, because people are starting to be like, this is awesome. Like, this is really great. But, like, no, every player is just like, oh, Jesus. Like, look at this guy. Lance Stephenson, for both the Pacers and the Heat and the rest of the league, is a guy that shows up to the bar and everyone goes, oh, God.
Yeah. I mean, some people have brought it up this morning on Twitter that, you know, that, like, he can be quirky and stuff in small doses, but there is a history that makes him kind of unlikable, and that's hard to get over. We don't have to get into that, but that's something where
there's an issue there, and I think that ducking is probably not, like, a good thing. I'm pretty sure that it's pretty much accepted as fact he did push the girlfriend down the stairs.
Right.
Right, like the case went away, and I'm willing to bend to a degree and say I wasn't there. I don't know the circumstances. I don't know what happened. Generally speaking, that's really hard to rationalize in any sort of instance. And it does. There's the guys on Paroxysm are talking about this morning about how do you reconcile the fact. I love watching Stephenson play. Like, I love that I like that he's blowing up LeBron's ear. I love that he's sticking his tongue out defending him. I love that he's getting up in Dwayne Wade's face. Like, I like the dramatics and the histrionics. I think it's amusing, but it does speak to how complicated it is with these guys, because you're like, I love that guy. And then you think about the stuff that you know about them, and you're like, I don't know why I love that guy.
That's always been one thing where it's like, you know, there's stuff off the court with several players, and I'm not gonna be an irresponsible, state senator and say like, oh, 90% of the NBA is like this. No, there are things with several players, not the majority, not most, off the court stuff where you're like, ugh, you know, that's not great, but I can look over that. The domestic violence stuff is never something I can get over, and that doesn't make me a hero at all. It's just like that's something where it's like that sticks in your head with all of the players that do it, because there's no excuse for it. Like, yeah. There's not an excuse for, you know, driving drunk either. There's not an excuse for, like, you know, drug issues when, you know, as long as it's not addiction, if it's just like a, you know, improper usage and stuff like that. Like, they're not really excuses. Like, you're adults, you should know better. But, like, the domestic violence stuff is something where it's like, no, I'm probably going to remember that about the player forever. And, you know, that's what happens when you do that. And it does, like, this stuff, you can't get caught up in the moment. It's like, oh, it's funny, he's blowing in his ear. Oh, it's funny, LeBron had a funny comment about that afterwards. But for the most part, it's just like, right, that happened. And some people will say, like, oh, that's unfair. That's, you know, case was thrown out. That's, or, you know, that he's paid his penance, or, you know, all that crap. Like, there are people who will defend it and say, you shouldn't think about that. You can choose to get over if you want. I choose not to. And that's my decision.
Well, Ty Lawson's an interesting case, because Ty Lawson got picked up last year for domestic violence, and the entire time he was like, I can't say anything, but seriously, this is not like what it looks like. No, seriously. And then essentially what happened was he and a girlfriend were screaming because of a dispute over certain events that transpired in his personal life, and like they broke each other's phones, and the cops were called, and the situation was so tense that both of them were arrested. But from all indications, that does not reflect any sort of – it doesn't reflect that Lawson committed any sort of act. So the stuff does get complicated, and that's why it's important when the stuff does get changed to be accurate in following up on the stuff, not just from a reporting standpoint, but from an aggregation standpoint for what we do. Like, I think that stuff is really important.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, because it's like, oh, yes, you get the headline. He was arrested or picked up on this, detained on this. And then so often we don't really see – that next, like, oh, by the way, here's what happened with that case, and here are the details of it, you know? Like, it's usually, yeah, you grab the headline, you move on, but that headline will stick in people's minds.
I don't know how I feel about the Heat, about the Pacers right now. They won by 3 with LeBron playing 24 minutes, with the Heat having 17 turnovers, but then it's like, they won. They won the game. It's going to 6. If they can manage to pull out one more rabbit out of their backside, they can get this thing back to Indiana for 7. Now, I don't know how you feel about playing in Indiana at this point, but that's all they got to do. They got to win. They got to find a way to get one outlier performance. Like, say, I'm trying to think of, like, C.J. Watson. C.J. Watson hit 6 threes against the Heat in Game 6. They'll probably win just because of the shooting performance. And now all of a sudden, it's back to Indiana. But I don't feel like – I don't even necessarily feel like they were the better team last night.
Yeah, I mean, last night was a weird game because you had – I mean, you had the LeBron foul trouble, but was that – no, I don't – all right, it wasn't neutralized, but that was certainly softened by the fact that you had 6 3-pointers from Rashard Lewis.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, yes, like, they had LeBron for half the game, and he couldn't be as aggressive towards the end of that because and it takes him out of rhythm, and his defense isn't on the floor, and, you know, like that's a huge deal that that he is not – like, I think he was guarding George Hill for a lot of that fourth quarter. At least maybe I just remember those possessions more specifically. But, you know, like, they had to change the way they played because of LeBron's foul trouble, which, you know, that happens. Like, the Pacers have had to go through that before. Like, that stuff happens. So that sucks. But at the same time, you got 6 threes out of Rashard Lewis, who hadn't hit a shot in the last two games. And so – how much does that counterbalance? Like, that doesn't neutralize it. That doesn't make it an even game. But that is an unexpected boost, right? And so at what point does that become, you know, well, sure, they had this problem, but they got this boost. And, you know, what evens out? Like, ultimately, like you said, Indiana won the game. And that's all that matters. And they do have to take, like, the cliche, like, take it one game at a time. Because when you think about, oh, you have to beat Miami 3 straight games in the playoffs to advance, that seems like that's not going to happen. But, you know, they won. They took care of the first one. Then they take care, like, let's say they take care of the second one. And then you've got home court, game 7 on your floor, which is what they wanted all year. I don't think they're going to win game 6. But, you know, they've got the first leg of that triple crown, right?
And they looked so out of it until halfway through the third.
I mean, Paul George went off.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he went off. He got stupid hot and was just like, which is good because they need him to be a superstar, and he was a superstar.
I loved watching him just basically say, all right, like David West, like, West has dragged us so far, it's time for me to drag this team. And he just put that team, the chain around his neck, and was like, nope, let's go, I'm dragging this thing home.
Dave West had some comment to Paul George of, like, don't leave any left in the chamber or something like that. Don't leave any bullets left in the chamber. Like, that's a fun line. I like that. Because that's the mentality. Like, it's win or your season's done, right? So you want a star player, or whether people agree he's a star anymore or ever was, like, you want a star player of a team in that moment to step up. And he did. And that was just great.
I like those plays, even though a lot of them were like contested mid-range jumpers. I like that more than most of the rest of their offense last night.
Right, that's the thing. This is a
they can't beat a double team.
Oh my god.
Good. I mean,
I love Roy, but his awareness on a double team, all he does is look in front of him. He doesn't look for cutters on the backside at all.
And it's funny because you and I spent most of the last podcast talking about, like, you know what, the NBA defense is really hard, and like it's all, and yeah, I found myself last night being like, just beat the double team. There's two of them there. Someone is open. Pass.
Yeah, that's the fun thing about basketball is it's complexly simple, right? Like the concept is very simple, but you can make that very complex with the way schemes are designed and help, and you're hiding stuff, you're not hiding stuff, and you're showing hard, or you're setting up like the, you know, defense of the next pass. Like, there's a lot of stuff you can do, but sometimes it is as simple as, like, turn and look for the open guy. Like,
yep.
You're taller than the guy guarding you. You have the length. Just turn around and see what's there. Don't panic. Don't get tunnel vision.
Let's tackle the elephant in the room.
Oh my god.
Let's go ahead and...
I thought this elephant was dead.
Nope. So LeBron chooses not to take a contested shot over several Pacers, passes the corner, splashes. It wasn't – at the time of the pass, it was a great look. The Pacers closed exceptionally well. They did a great job running that off. Pass to the corner, 3, Bosch misses, game – like, essentially game over. They went on to hit free throws, game over. Our colleague Greg Doyle, I was calling this morning – call him last night – torching it, saying how the right basketball play isn't the right play there. And I will say that Greg's tone has been a little bit misconstrued in that piece, because one thing he said is it depends on what prism you look at it through. Like, that was mostly his point. Like, you can look at this from a basketball play perspective or from what is, you know, what is the absolute right decision here. And based off of the fact, and it's a little, you know, it's definitely based off of result, because he's saying, you know, he missed, so it was incorrect. Like, he should have taken that shot. But it wasn't necessarily, like, there was no, like, LeBron is weak or LeBron is weak-minded or weak-willed.
This wasn't 2011.
Yeah. And, like, honestly, for those, like, don't, like, Greg's a different writer now. He just is. Like, he's just, like, his opinion on LeBron has evolved substantially since 2011. But I guess the thing for you and I to talk about is I had this idea pop in my head last night, and there's not time for me to write about it because we have, like, the playoffs. So, of course, like, next day, move on to the next thing. But I do find this idea really fascinating, which is I realize that if you subscribe to the idea that he should pass, it's based off of essentially deductive reasoning. You're going through a logic pattern of what is the most logical decision to make in this instance. Because it's a low percentage shot to shoot over guys, because a corner three is a higher percentage shot, because an open shot it has a higher percentage than a non-open shot, and because of the value inherently of a three-pointer over a two-pointer, particularly a contested one, factored with Roy Hibbert's interior defense, the logical decision is for him to pass. That's the right play, as it's always said. It's not, you know, we use the word right. It's a more accurate term is that's the correct from a probability standpoint. That's the most optimum outcome decision based on probability that you can make. But what I think is interesting is the opposite is based off of, if you believe that he should shoot, it's essentially based off of what I refer to as a basketball dogma. And it's really goes beyond that to a sports dogma, which is why should he take that shot? And the answers are because big players make that shot, because he's the man, because that's what he's paid for, because that's what makes players great. All of those are reflective. If you were to basically take that down and really boil it down to its core logical elements, that becomes why should LeBron take that shot? Because LeBron should take that shot. It becomes circular. And I'm not even arguing that that's necessarily false, because what you're talking about here is essentially faith. It's almost like religion in that it doesn't matter what the logical or scientific elements are in play here. The core belief that you are better off with LeBron James shooting than Chris Bosh is an inherent absolute. And that tension between those two concepts, that I actually find interesting.
I have a couple of questions that I know the answers to, but I'm just going to ask them anyway
for really
dramatic, you know, build up here. What was the score of that game? Just what was the margin
when 3 points.
In that moment? No, in that moment, what were they down?
It was two.
They were down two, right?
Yeah.
Say Chris Bosh hits a three. They're going for the win, correct? They're not going for the tie on that play because LeBron kicks it out for a 3-point shot and knowingly kicks it out for a 3-point shot, right?
Correct.
Do we want our superstars to have a killer instinct?
Yes.
Okay. He went for the kill.
Ooh, I like it.
He did. He went for the kill. If anything, like, I could maybe say, like, the way George Hill defended that was actually excellent, because he's kind of sitting in the middle. He's got Bosch in the corner, Ray Allen on the wing. So he's kind of, like, defending that perfectly. Now, he's not going to block that shot, but you contested it enough. I'm not sure, like, you know, I always talk about if a shooter knows that he has the space to get that shot off, you know, they're not going to feel like any contest is a true contest, right?
Right.
And so when that happens, like, I'm not sure that Bosch is a good enough shooter. Like, he's obviously a very good shooter. But I don't know that he is a, you know, he hasn't grown up as a shooter. He hasn't had that mentality. He's not Steph Curry. Like, he's not Ray Allen. He's not that guy that is necessarily going to feel extreme comfort on a challenge. Now, that's me assuming a lot here. That's me assuming psychology and the way he is, like, and I could be completely wrong about that, but that's just going to be my assumption. It's not a weakness with him. It's just he's grown up as a big man, and now he's turned into a shooter. I don't know that he's made that click, right?
Right.
So if anything, like, that contest is a great way to bother the shot under this assumption. Now, maybe Chris Bosh should have kicked it to Ray Allen. I'm not sure if the rotation was there to cover Allen, but I'm going to assume that pass was there. So either way, he's either setting up a Chris Bosh game-winning three, or he's setting up the hockey assist for a Ray Allen game-winning three. But we want superstars to go for the kill. And everything you've said about that, you know, it, you know, the right basketball play versus this, you know, kind of ideological sports, you know, mantra of we need, you know, we want this religious experience, and that would be a religious experience. Okay, we want him to go for the kill. He went for the kill. That he hits that shot, they get a stop. That ends Indiana's season. That doesn't just win the game. That ends the season and sends them in the finals. So yeah, you could have wanted him to take the tie. I like the fact that they went for the win there. Like that's also the cliche is you go for the tie at home, you go for the win on the road, and that's what he did. And that's the thing of like this whole discussion of like, oh, killer instinct, blah blah blah. No, he went for the kill. He didn't go for the hey, let's play five more minutes. And that's the difference between this one and a different situation. Like he tried to end their season this time. This wasn't a shrinking from the moment. He tried to end Indiana's season, and it didn't work out. And so then, yeah, you play the results instead of the process.
Great sports take, Mike.
thanks.
That was good. No. The other thing I came to last night is this. I get that people don't follow the NBA as closely as you or I do. Thank God.
They have a what do you call those? What do you call those? Lives.
Right. We've been down this road long enough, and LeBron's been a popular character, and he's been in the mainstream for long enough. I came back to this. He was drafted in 2003.
Yes.
First instance I remember of this being an issue was 2005. He passed up a game-winning shot. I was sitting in a bar in Austin, Texas, and he passed up a game-winning shot. And the next day the question was, why didn't LeBron take that shot? Is this the type of player that he's going to be? Is he the type of player that passes up the game-winning shot? 2005, mind you. This is when he started getting this. 6 years later is the 2011 finals when he really took heat for all this. At this point in his career, everyone accepts that he's a great player. Everyone accepts that he is at least top 10 player of all time. Everyone accepts that he's won two titles. So if you accept that he is great and you know that at this point in his career, he's always done this, he has always made that decision, he will always make that decision, to me, it's arguing about something that's an impossibility. LeBron should take that shot. I don't think that at this point it would be like rewiring someone to do something entirely different. I can't think of a good comparison for myself in my daily life, but it would be like telling me to do something that I've done every single day, not think to not do that. There's a point where I'm just like, he is that guy. Like, we've got to accept that he is that guy. And I'm not saying even though I do think it's a great thing for him. I think it's part of what makes him amazing. I think it's part of what makes him a more likable superstar than some of the other legends that we've seen in this game. But even if you disagree with that, there's no point in arguing with it because it would be like arguing for Kobe to pass. Like that's the kind of the reflection that I also came to was, I'm not going to sit there and ask Kobe Bryant to pass. He's not doing it. That's not happening.
Well, it's just at this point, like, to complain about that shot or that pass into, you know, instead of taking the shot, like, it's just like at this point, like, why? What is the point? That's ultimately what I want to know is, like, what are you getting out of this? You get to discount LeBron's greatness in your mind because you don't think he's as worthy as Kobe or Michael Jordan or whoever, like that. And like, okay, but like, you've just got to, like, it's 2014. You've just got to update your values in basketball. Like, you can appreciate the greatness of LeBron James, and he is great, and he's historically great, and that can't be debated. Like, he just is. You can, and by the way, he's halfway through his career. That's another scary thing. Like, assuming he doesn't want to retire early, like, he's halfway through his career, and this is what he's accomplished. But like, you can, it's just the idea, like, you can appreciate greatness without having to love him. No one's asking you to be his fan. Maybe his LeBron app is. I still haven't downloaded it. I don't know what that does. Maybe that is asking you to be his fan. By the way, you know we're getting his decision via the app, right?
Ooh, that'd be great.
No, that's awesome. I guarantee that's what's going to happen. Like, we went from the decision to, like, you know, the decision.app or whatever. But no one is asking you to be his fan. We're just asking you not to be stupid about him. And yes, that's an elitist attitude, and it's something that a lot, you know, there are people who like the podcast but don't like when we get on, you know, the fan mentality or whatever. I'm not asking you to be his fan. I'm just asking you to not see stupid things about him. There's plenty to criticize. That's not one of them. You can discuss it without like discounting it. That's the thing. Like, there's nuance to moments like this.
I like it. I like it a lot.
Do you think the Pacers win Game 6? I need a hot sports take prediction.
No, I don't. I don't think they win Game 6. I think, well, one, I think LeBron's going to be like, fine.
I think it's hilarious. I think it'll be hilarious if LeBron shoots 20 free throws next game.
Right?
Because, I mean, all right, Paul George had the home cooking comment, and then LeBron is in foul trouble. And I don't think that anything had to do with the other, but it's just kind of funny,
it's
the
funny
coincidence. Yeah. And, I mean, that was the thing. Like, I tweeted out that, or I saw that Ed Malloy was going to be the referee, one of the referees last night. And so,
oh, Ed Malloy!
And so I tweeted it out, and someone's like, oh, game six guaranteed. I was like, no, not necessarily. He's just incompetent. And a lot of those fouls were like, it wasn't like, oh, the NBA is setting it up. It's just like, no, Ed Malloy could have called anything in those situations, and it wouldn't have shocked me. Like, because he's just a bad ref.
I did a GIF-by-GIF breakdown of, or GIF-by-GIF if you prefer, of LeBron's fouls last night for CBSSports.com. You can check it out.
Yes, you did.
Two things about it. One, for those asking, why didn't you do this for Paul George or George Hill? I'm going to be really honest. No one cares. That's why. I write things because I care about them,
right.
And sometimes I write things because other people care about them. I don't care about fouls. I've told this to every single team blogger that gets upset about it. Officiating is like an act of God. You can't control it. You can't understand it. You just need to accept that it happened and focus on the things that your team can control. So I don't care. But people really care about LeBron James getting in foul trouble. Paul George gets in foul trouble, and no one notices. It's just, oh, Paul George was in foul trouble. LeBron James almost never fouls out or gets in foul trouble. Only 10 times in his playoff career, which you could say that sounds high, but think about how many times he's been in the playoffs. Him getting in foul trouble is a big deal. Shifts the entire game.
Right.
And, you know, and there's going to be – and a lot of it was also there were questionable calls. So I broke down – I broke them down one by one, and if to summarize for those, you should go watch it, but if you want a summary, one call was really good. It was easy. LeBron even raised his hand and was like, yeah, I got him, which is funny because somebody still this morning was like, there was no contact on that play. I was like, he literally acknowledged he fouled him.
He literally admitted it, so there's probably no arguing that.
And one of them was a clearly a bad call, George Hill's driving layup. He didn't get enough contact, if
right.
any. That was just the referee just took a bad angle and didn't see it right. The Paul George flop is one that I would say probably I would have called – well, I not I would have. From what I understand of the rules, I would believe that to be a block.
Yeah, it was a block.
It's – when I slowed it down, it's a lot more complicated, but the officials don't get to do that. And live, I would have called it a block.
Right.
Like – when I slowed it down, I was like, oh, wow. Like, there's a moment in time before LeBron gets there when Paul is actually leaning sideways and has established possession for a half second before James makes contact. So it's like, wow, like, it really could have been called a charge. But then I was like, he clearly did not see that. This was a half second. This is like a millisecond of time.
Right.
Like, you know, it's like there's absolutely no way that could have been called correctly. And if you play it in full motion, it very much looks like a block that George flopped on. So that was like a bang bang questionable one. The Lance Stephenson one is kind of the flip side of that, in which when I watch it from the front angle, James does lean into Stephenson and interrupt his path to the ball. And by making contact with his body, even though it was a mad scramble and they were touching each other, nobody was impacting the other one's ability to get to the ball until James put his hip into Stephenson.
Right.
So that one is a bang bang either way call, but I can understand it being called that way. So now you're at basically 2-2.
Yeah.
You can call either
personally, I would have liked a no call in that situation because I didn't feel like either guy. I mean, I know that at one point Lance has his hands on LeBron, and then LeBron puts his hip into him, like you said. But I didn't feel like the progress towards the ball was truly impeded. I felt like it was a scramble, and so I would have preferred a no call and just let's see if you do get a more legitimate foul on that play or if it plays out and someone just gets the ball.
And then the last one is the first one, which was George Hill ran straight in – or I think it was Paul George – ran straight in the line, and both Wade and James were there, and he tripped and he fell. And you can call it incidental contact. You can call it incidental contact. You can call it tripping depending on the positioning of the foot. And that's one that's up in the air. That one I probably
– I was fine with that one.
Yeah. So it's like, if you ask me, there was only one call, the George Hill runner or layup, that I was like, that's a terrible call. The rest of them I can at least be like, okay, it's bang bang. I kind of get where they're coming from.
Certainly.
That one and the Paul George flop are the two. The two involving Paul George are the ones that I look at and go, probably not. Even then, you know, they still had – and I will say this. I love the fact that after Paul George comes out and is, you know, like home cooking, we outplayed them, which was ridiculous, like all this stuff. That
LeBron's reaction to that was amazing. He's just like studying the stat sheet. He's like he names off three different stats where they clearly like dominated the Pacers. He's like, I don't agree with that.
Right? And then last night they asked LeBron about the same thing. Like, and you know, like, you could tell every sports writer, and I would be the same way, like salivating over, come on, say something, say something to the officials, come on. And instead LeBron's like, no, this happens. Like, you guys get in foul trouble. We had a chance to win the game and we didn't.
Right.
Oh, like, he's – I've been when they advance to the finals, I really want to write this column basically about – it's really striking to me the level of maturity differential. Like, I've defended James from the nonsense that he's had to take because of the level of scrutiny that he's been under for most of his career, especially since the decision. But there was always that you had to acknowledge – that he did have an attitude that was problematic. He is a really mature dude in terms of how he goes about his business right now.
Oh, definitely.
Before we go to WCF, I want to ask you, Bosch said without saying he's coming back.
Yes.
Do you take anything into that, or do you say – I took my typical stance of these things when I aggregated it, which was, we'll see. You know, he's got a month. Stuff happens.
Yeah, I think that – I think all three guys are going to come back for less than max value.
That's crazy to me that Chris is going to turn to – like, LeBron, it makes sense because LeBron has shoe contracts and McDonald's deals that are worth, like, more than his actual contract. It's a little bit surprising to me that Bosch, with this being his – I mean, I admire it because it's what I always like you guys to do, but it is a little surprise to me that because if I were Chris Bosch, I'd be like, nope, I'm going to the Bobcats. Like,
I mean, I just think Bosch is – I think his perspective on everything is just incredible. Yeah. Like, his perspective on his role, on what he does in the NBA, on where he is. Like, that dude just seems comfortable and happy and content. And he's comfortable, happy, and content on, you know, still one of the most scrutinized teams in sports, right? Like, there's – the Cowboys are probably the most scrutinized, and then after that, I don't know who. But, like, the Heat are still up there. And it's just this thing where, like, nothing seems to rattle him. He just understands life. And I think that he understands that, you know, yes, he has to work harder this way, but at the same time, he has less pressure, and he's successful. And so why wouldn't he stick with that? So I don't expect any of those three guys to leave. And I think they'll take below market value.
Oh. Via Mark Stein of ESPN, Vinny Del Negro has emerged as a serious candidate for the Wolves job.
Of course. I don't think he will. I think it'll be Sam Mitchell.
Okay. All right, Western Conference Finals. So game 5 tonight.
You know what is awkward? And it helps the fact that I don't have a dog in this race. That's not really the proper term, but I don't like a dog in a fight because then it just reminds me of Michael Vick. I don't have a dog in this race, but it's awkward watching one team's fan base just completely, like, bargain after a loss. And that's what I felt like I was watching with the Spurs fans on Twitter. And I'm not trying to, like, disparage them or anything. It's just, like, awkward of, like, well, we still have this to go on, you know, to go with, and I understand it. Like, I would probably be doing the same thing in my head, but it's like this, like, you're tweeting out and you're like trying to convince yourself, and it looks like you're trying to convince everybody else, and maybe you are, but it's just like the Thunder for 2 years have been better than you with this full complement of players, correct?
Yep.
And now they kind of have this full complement of players back, and they've been better than you for two games. Like, I get, like, oh, it was on the road, we get to go back home and all that, but like, you trying to tell everyone how calm you are seems like you're not calm to me. And maybe I'm just I'm just reading too much into it. But it was a lot of bargaining.
Yeah, there's a lot of that goes into it. Like, there's
which is a natural sports thing. Like, I do it with the 49ers, I'm sure.
See, I don't want the Chiefs. Every time they lose, I'm like, well, that's it. Season's over. Not going to make the playoffs. We're doomed. I'll say this. Spurs fans have a harder time than anyone else admitting that someone is better than them. It's just problematic because they've been so good, and they're defensive because of the whole national attention, yada, yada, yada. They have a really hard time with that. And additionally, they really dislike, I think, the idea of losing to the Thunder. From talking to some of them, they're offended by the skill gap. Like, how can this team be as good when Scottie Brooks is their coach? How can this team be better than San Antonio when Russell Westbrook just runs up and down the floor and takes these terrible shots? How can this team be better than the Spurs? Like, it seems impossible because of the way that they combat them. And I think that has a lot to do with it. I think there's also a desperation level where, like, as much as they're like, well, they've been saying we've been done for 6 years, but there's also like, no, seriously, like, Tim, like, it went from Duncan saying, well, I can play for several more years, Duncan being like, oh, I can probably like two. Like, the window is closing even if it's not shut. And I think there's a level of desperation in that. I find the whole ideas behind the series really interesting in terms of precision versus athleticism. I like that tension. Like, it's just a really interesting, yeah.
It's a cool juxtaposition, like, of just, yeah, like two very different things. And it's like, yes, the Spurs have some athleticism, and especially defensively the Thunder have some precision, but for the most part, like, they're very opposite.
I mean, you can talk about athletic, you can say, well, the Spurs have athleticism, they've got great athletes. I watched Boris Diaw trying to track Kevin Durant in full court. Don't bring that here.
The thing that I do wonder, like, I believe the Spurs can still win the series. Like, they're still very good, obviously. Breaking news. And I apologize for the construction noise outside the window right now. Nothing I can do about it. I do think that there's... I wonder how much they can do. Like, they had a lot of uncontested shots in Game 4, and they missed, you know, a decent chunk of them. But, like, at a certain point, like, even those uncontested shots, like, I wonder how many of them are uncomfortable looks because they're running you off your spots.
Yeah, I think – I'm getting ready to post the preview, and I just found this stat, okay? In Games 1 and 2, Tony Parker's points per possession in taking shots out of the pick and roll was 1.0. Really good. In Games 3 and 4, it was 0.4. He scored less than a half a point per possession in pick and roll shooting.
That seems bad to me.
Like, that's monstrous, because Parker, and I was on San Antonio radio yesterday, and we were talking about a number of things. And I will say that some people in San Antonio are panicking, like, straight up panic. Ari Temkin, who I love down there, is like, I don't see how they can beat this team. Whenever Ibaka plays, they just cannot beat them. Like, is this? He actually asked me, he's like, is this series over? And I was like, it's 2-2. You have home court. It's okay. Like, it's going to be fine. Probably. As long as you can run faster. But Parker cannot be scared of Serge Ibaka. Like, that's got to end. I understand how big of an impact he's made. I get the numbers saying that when he's in the game, you shoot X percent in the restricted area. You can't stop. You gotta wear him out.
That's the thing. Like, he has an injured calf. Like, you have to keep going at him, because if you can keep the game close, what are the odds he's gonna be able to still make those plays on that injured calf, you know, late in the fourth quarter? Like, I realize you have to get to that point where you're close enough to capitalize on that, but, like, my God, just keep going at him. It's like when a guy rolls his ankle, stays in the game, they go at him for one or two plays, and then they go away from him. I'm like, no, keep going. Like, make that thing swell up. Like Lance Stephenson won it with Dwayne Wade. Make that injury swell. Make it impossible for him to move. Like, this is something where it drives me crazy. Like, yes, you're going to get your shot blocked. Keep going.
Thiago Splitter has got a man out, but he's got to – when they give him the ball in the post and they need to, he's got to keep attacking. He gets blocked, and then he's pretty much like, oh, well, I suppose I'm useless then. Thank you. Like, no, man. Like, you're taller than him. Keep shooting. Don't stop. I mean, that's one of the things I love about Duncan, is because Duncan's like, all right, that's fine. If you're going to do this, let's run some pick and pop. I'm going to take some mid-range jumpers. I'm going to get him out the lane. Like, Duncan does what he needs to do. The rest of that team gets really stressed out. They get really stressed out versus this team.
Yeah, I mean, well, for all the precision, if you screw up that precision, like, a turnover or a long rebound turns into 2 points really quickly. Like, they were, the Thunder had 21 fast break points to zero by the Spurs in game four. Zero. This is a Spurs team that can get out and hurt you quickly in transition, and it didn't happen once.
I mean, maybe, part of it is they need to rely on guys that I don't trust in. Like, Marco Bellinelli needs to have a big game. I don't think he can, but he needs to have a big game. We saw a little bit of this in game four, and like, Manu played, I think, 11 minutes, and people are like, how can you blame him for the loss? I was like, those 11 minutes were bad. He took 8 shots in those 11 minutes. Manu's got to calm down. Like, I love when he takes high percentage looks. He is so effective. When he's rejecting the pick and getting to the rim, when he's taking those offensive rebound threes, I mean, he kills you. Like, Manu Ginobili absolutely murders your team's soul when he's...
Here's the thing is, I think he has to keep doing this because Tony Parker's been so bad.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. It's like there's a balance that's needed, and I'm fine with Manu being aggressive and taking, you know, big shots, and, you know, hopefully they go in, but he doesn't have to do as much of that if Tony Parker is giving them something early in the game and late in the game, you know, and it is something where, like, Tony Parker's, not incompetence, but just ineffectiveness against Serge Ibaka has that lasting effect, because then it rolls more pressure onto Manu and the decisions he makes.
Let me roll out this idea that you're going to hate. I want them to start Jeremy Lamb.
Yeah, I don't like that idea, but I don't mind him getting time over Thabo in this series. Like, I think Lamb is a guy where you bring him off the bench early, you see if he has an impact, and if he doesn't, then don't worry about him the rest of the game. You know, maybe right. You try him one other spot, but I do like him as, like, kind of that microwave type thing. Like, see if he can be hot early, and it's not just with shooting. It's like, you know, he had, what, 2 or 3 steals right away last game when he came in. Like,
maybe they should instead of starting him, they should do like they do with Kawhi with Durant. Only every time Manu comes in, Lamb comes in.
Yes, I like that.
Because Thabo hasn't done well on Ginobili or Parker. And I really don't like Reggie Jackson defensively in this series. I am a very lukewarm, like, Reggie Jackson in the super basketball universe is kind of a divisive figure. I'm kind of just like, oh, he's good. Like, he's a good reserve point guard. I like him. He's talented. He makes some good moves sometimes. He's got a nice floater. But defensively, I think that he's got a lot of issues, where in the Clippers series, it was all about quickness. You need length in this one. Right. And Lamb has such freakishly long arms that I really like. I loved how Westbrook and Lamb attacked the pick and roll, like going behind it and just attacking the dribble. It's been a really interesting adjustment because it takes teams a long time to figure this out. In the regular season, if you reach, you're getting called for a foul, I would say, like 60 to 70% of the time, just because that's the way that the regular season is called. That number drops dramatically in the playoffs.
Like, yeah, I would agree with that.
They're really okay with you reaching.
Yeah.
Like, you're allowed to attack the ball a lot more in the playoffs, so I like that. I mean, I guess beyond that, it's just get Parker back in the middle, create and try and find those corner threes. They've got to get back to shooting the shots that they're good at.
Yeah, and it just come down to, you've got to find a way to score inside, and that will set up a 3-point shot, and that's where you overwhelm them, right?
Oh, one more thing on the fans. This is when I heard, well, the Thunder aren't going to play this well again. You cannot say that after you demolish them in games one and two. Like, it goes both ways. Like,
right.
This is something the fans really need to understand. Your best game is not, oh, that's how the Spurs play. It's, you had two games where you looked phenomenal versus a Serge Ibaka-less defense. Like, you were tremendous. You defined basketball. That's great. You're not always going to execute that level. So you're going to have to win some of these games when you're not defining basketball beauty. You're going to have to find other ways to win. Just like the Thunder aren't going to be able to run up and down the floor all the time. They're going to get tired sometimes, and the Spurs are going to be back before them in some instances. You know, Westbrook's probably not going to score 40 again in the series. He can,
right.
but
right.
he's probably not going to. But he needs to be effective. And there is that line with Westbrook. And even I, as like a ardent admirer and defender of him, like I know, like there's going to be games that he's probably going to put them in risk of losing, if not lose for them. That's part of the danger with him because he's so good overall.
Yeah, yeah. No, I completely agree. Who do you think wins? Who do you think wins tonight?
I think I'll take Spurs.
I'm going to go Thunder just because, and it's a weird, like, I'm not challenging them or whatever, but it's just like, I need to see the Spurs prove that they can and will beat the Thunder when they have this athletic advantage.
Yeah.
And it's not that I don't doubt that they can, I got to see it.
Last thing before I let you go, dang, Cavaliers reportedly not interested. Give me one team where you'd like to see Lil Dang sign this summer.
Ooh, that's a good question. What about if Houston finds a way to sign and trade for him?
I was gonna say I can't really choose one. I want any of the three Texas teams.
Oh,
any of them would be great with him.
If he replaces Sean Marion,
yeah.
Assuming Sean Marion wants a bigger deal somewhere, I also like that idea.
It works out. I think he works like he's exactly what Houston needs. He's exactly what Dallas needs, and he's exactly what the Spurs always wind up getting for less.
Yep. Go Texas.
Thanks, Zach.
Thanks, Matt.